Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxey.
What's up, what's up, what's up? How you guys doing out there, all my friends and fans on the Boxing Breakdown? This is your host, Mark Roxey, and I am delighted to be with you tonight, and I am joined by my host and partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up, what's up, what's up?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm great, man.
It is another episode of the Boxing Breakdown, and it's you and me, brother. We are here. We are post Joshua and Usyk, and we have lots of stuff to talk about Antonio and Alexander. And so tell me, man, did you get a chance to watch the fight?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow. Hopefully you guys out there listening in, you got a chance to watch the fight. And please, if you are joining us on YouTube, please make sure you hit the like and subscribe and make sure that you get down there and throw your comments down there so we can chat you in. And we'll be sure to give you a little shout out. And we'd love to hear what you have to say either now or when we play this back. So we have our comments here. So if you do decide to join in, do that, and we'd be delighted to answer any questions you might have. But tell me what you thought on Saturday night. Tell me what you thought. Hey, give it to me.
Hey, first of all, the entrance that AJ had was fabulous. As in, it reminded me of the Olympics. You know how they have all the pyrotechnics and the overhead shots of the stadium.
Yeah.
And all that was spectacular. I mean, that was like really, really nice and really it just theatrically it was beautiful. And then his walk in, you know, was great. You know, the long walk, all the elements were going on. I really enjoyed the fire, the flames and all of that. And then, you know, the posturing before he came to the ring. It was well done, very, very well done. And, you know, a stadium of that size, I'm sure it was great to be there. So I start off with that, and I enjoyed that. I really did.
Yeah, so walk us through it for the listeners who may have not been able to tune in to the matchup, which was held on The Zone, Matchroom Boxing. Walk us through how that worked out, how it went.
As in the fight itself, or
no? As in the ring walks, like just like how, like try to describe that to the listeners.
Well, the ring walk, of course, came in, and you know the stadium was completely dark. And before he came in, they let all the fireworks erupt around the rim of the stadium that was going in. You know, that was hovering over the stadium in a sense. And if you watch the Olympics, you saw how they did that, where you have all these fireworks going on and they're in circular type of pattern. And, you know, it's just a lot of content in the air. And that went on for a little while. And then the illumination of the of his walkway when he came out was kind of illuminated. And as he was walking forward, you know, there was a fire on either side and a lot of different things were going on as far as, you know, just augmenting his walk, his ascension to the ring, if you want to say it.
Right.
But there was one point where he stopped and all of a sudden, maybe 8, 9, 10 pots of fire or flames erupted on either side of him. And it was really spectacular because, you know, if you ever been close to him, like, you can always almost feel the heat. So right. You were in that arena, even though it was 60,000 people, when they lit that thing up, you could feel the flash of heat on your face. Wow. Just from, you know, past situations. So that was really good. And then when he made his way into the ring and all of that, so that was very theatrical. It was. The ring wasn't lit up at all until he got close to it, because Usyk was already in the ring.
Right.
So
made it dark. They made it dark for Usyk.
Yes. So the whole thing was just, was just well done. And, 60,000 people, they paying, that type of number, that they're going to want to see a show. And they absolutely saw a show in that regard, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, let's just talk a little bit about this because Anthony Joshua was 23-1 with 22 knockouts to his name. And then Usyk was, prior to the fight, 18-0 with 13 knockouts to his name. And so they both came into the ring with something to prove. And actually, what I find to be the most impressive about the fight is that Usyk, obviously he's not a traditional heavyweight. But it's just amazing what the performance that he was able to produce. And, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, your experience of watching the fight and what you thought of it.
Well, initially, the first round is so characteristic of, the timber of a fight in some certain situations.
Right.
A basic premise of a left-handed fighter fighting a right-handed fighter properly was the entire key to this entire fight.
Right.
And there's a lot of people talking about this and that and this and that, and he did this and he did that. But if you want to be really basic and really to the point, what really mattered in my mind was a simple fact that, Mark, you can explain further if I don't do a good job. But if, in fact, you are a left-handed fighter, you keep your right foot outside of the right foot of the right-handed fighter. That keeps you out of the range of the right-hand fighter's power, which is the right hand. Your move is to constantly move to your right, circle to your right at all times. That keeps you out of the line of fire. But it also, as a southpaw, lines you up for your power shot, which is the straight left hand. Now, the very first round, he executed that, and he was able to hit AJ with some straight left hands initially. And it just set the tone of the entire fight. At that point, AJ realized he had to try to box this guy, and that was not a situation that was going to work for him. Usyk, as we had earlier spoke of, he had never lost a fight, so therefore mentally he was very, very strong with that. He figured that would never happen to him. And in fact, Joshua had been knocked out. So I can continue if you like, or if you have something you want to interject, please do, because my mind is swimming with this stuff right now.
Well, you know what? I was just sitting back and having a sip of my wine here, which was very, very good. And I was listening to what you were saying, and I was enjoying it very much. I do want to go back to what you said about a traditional southpaw. You know, the one thing about southpaws, people may, it's arguable, right? I was a southpaw. I am a southpaw. And the one thing I know about southpaws is that, okay, so yes, if you want to know what the textbook rule is for a southpaw, yes, you want to keep your foot, everybody's beat, trying to get that position on the outside of a southpaw. And what that means is my right foot is forward and you're trying to get your left foot on the outside of my right foot. And what that gives you is the ability to kind of work me with a hook and work me with a straight right hand to the body, straight right hand to the head. You can control the jab hand off of that. You can kind of neutralize the jab hand so it can't extend. And so that's why a lot of times right-handed fighters want to get onto the outside of a southpaw. The thing that most people fail to understand is that most Southpaws know this, right? And so we come up with all kinds of countermeasures. Most Southpaws, traditional and unorthodox Southpaws, will come up with all kinds of other counter maneuvers to reposition the fighter so that you can take that position. We'll give you the position, but you're going to get hit with the overhand left. You're going to get hit with left hands to the body. You will get hit with uppercuts. And we know what's coming because we have so much experience seeing what that is. Most Southpaws do have a lot of experience seeing what is coming on that side. So I would say also the walk-off is key for Southpaws, the stabs to the heart, the stab to the midsection. So Southpaws are very, very tricky if they are not how could I say this in the nicest way? If they are not from the Ukraine, right? Southpaws already are difficult. I mean, you got like Shakur Stevenson, Terrence Crawford. You can go back into the history books and look at great Southpaws. Manny Pacman, Pacquiao. You can just go back into that's not the history books, by the way, folks, but you can go back into the history books and look at great Southpaws and, they all are able to make that battle happen. We can work that battle. But what you have with a Ukrainian fighter is you have a completely different thing, Harold, because Ukrainian fighters by nature are taught, like the school of boxing has so much to do with dancing. There's so much dance involved. There's rhythms. There's timing and rhythm and movement and position and angles, and really tremendous amount of effort goes into the footwork that the Ukrainian fighter typically gets trained with. So, when you look at what Usyk was able to do, you can see he kind of Lomachenko'd him. He kind of used a lot of what you see Lomachenko doing in fights and, proposing different angles and really, I don't think Joshua really was ready for any of that, Harold.
Yes, yes, yes. First of all, I had to correct myself. As you said, Mark, it is the right-handed fighter. His left foot is forward, and the southpaw is to be on the outside of that.
Right.
Of course. What I was saying was, like you said, southpaws are someone that most fighters want to avoid. Lennox Lewis never fought a southpaw right. His entire career, at no time. Yeah. Any fighter that was left hand, he didn't take it. So if you talk to him, he would tell you, I never fought a southpaw. I didn't want to. And I wasn't going to.
And Harold? You know why?
He told me.
He probably got dogged in training. He probably got dogged in a sparring session or several sparring sessions. He was like, yo, I just don't have the mental dexterity to switch it up like that. So, and some people just can't, like some southpaws, you know what the killer of a southpaw is?
The right hand as I know it.
No.
Straight right hand.
Well, that's not what, that's what people think. Yeah, but no, we get so skilled. Southpaws get so skilled at dealing with the right hand. It's not. You know what it is, Harold? It's another southpaw. the killer of a southpaw is another southpaw. If you're not used to fighting southpaws, that's real, man. Like some southpaws are not good. And I beg to think that Lennox Lewis was the kind of southpaw was the kind of fighter that was not interested in getting in the ring with a southpaw. He was like, yo, I tried that. It didn't work. I'm out. So it makes a lot of sense,
But you were talking about the Lomachenko situation.
Yeah.
Of course, we spoke earlier. Usyk is in that camp. Lomachenko's father is an influence on Usyk's training with the dance, as you will, the movement. And as you said, he Lomachenko'd him, but he came up in that same type of discipline and he just applied it the way Lomachenko's father applied it to Lomachenko. So that was very clear to see and you know, as they moved around. However, what I saw was the moment he started moving the wrong way, Joshua won two rounds. He won the fifth and the sixth because Usyk was moving to his left instead of his right.
Yeah.
After the seventh round, he regained keeping his foot on the outside and moved. You know, he went left and right, but he moved primarily to his right outside the power. In my mind, that fight was a 10-2. 10 to Usyk, 2 to Joshua.
Wow.
If you want to be generous, it was 9-3. But that was it. And I clearly saw the only reason that he was able to win those two rounds because Usyk was coming right to him. This reminds me of Foreman and Michael Moore.
Oh, yeah.
That whole fight was on my end of my seat saying, please don't go the wrong way. Don't go the wrong way. He had the discipline not to go the wrong way. But that round where he got knocked out, he started going the wrong way midway of the round before.
Yeah.
He continued to go the wrong way,
yeah,
and he got hit. And I saw it coming. I said, you can't, you know, stop your, you know, your discipline on keeping yourself outside. He didn't do it, and he got knocked out. So that's what I saw to this time. However, he was able to keep it, and he lost two rounds only because he had a little lapse. But other than that, he was successful.
So, Harold, you remember we spoke about this in the last podcast. For those of you that didn't hear the prelude to the Joshua Usyk fight, we actually did a podcast and we kind of talked a little bit about this. You know, I mean, if you go back and listen to that podcast, you'll hear a lot of what we're saying now. We actually said that before, but I just felt that, you know, first of all, if you didn't catch this on the last podcast, I was talking about how Usyk actually faced Sean Porter in the amateurs.
Yes.
So yeah. Usyk is a guy that truly is like a chameleon in the weight division. He's really a special kind of a fighter that could, you know, step all the way up to this weight class and do what he was able to do. So against a really, really big guy too. So very impressive. And, you know, he boxes literally like a welterweight. You know, I mean, the way he moves around and the way his head movement, I just don't think Joshua was ready for those angles. He wasn't really able to deal with all the footwork and the angles and the stutter steps and the feints and the double stepping and, you know, like all the stuff that was happening in the fight was just a little bit out of Joshua's privy. I mean, and he didn't do a terrible job in the fight either. I just think that Usyk had a better, better game plan for the fight.
Yeah, I agree totally. He really pulled a muscle with his game plan. He tried to box him, but he didn't have any throwaway punches, as in he was trying to land everything he threw, whereas Usyk was kind of pawing at times,
right,
trying to, you know, kind of blind him a little bit with the yep. fakes or whatever.
Peeling him like an onion. Happened,
some of those things weren't necessarily power. Please, go ahead.
No, I just said he was peeling him like an onion, Harold.
Yes, yes.
Peeling him.
And then he would blind him with the right hand jab or yeah. you know, kind of pairing the right hand jab, and he comes straight right behind him with a powerful left hand. So he employed all those things a smaller man would use, you know, against a bigger man like that. Now I do give it to Joshua; he was able to move around with him pretty quickly there, but he just didn't have anything he could really affect Usyk with.
Right
now. Usyk just really stuck to the discipline that one must have. And I'm really impressed by that.
So Harold, let's talk about this with the fans. What do you think is going to happen next? Did this fight, did the Alexander Usyk an Anthony Joshua fight just open up the floodgates to usher in a brand new golden era of boxing? Is that what just happened?
Well, I look at it this way. You have a particular personality of the fighters that were involved in this bout here. Anthony Joshua is not necessarily a killer. He doesn't have, in what I've seen, a situation where he is going to grit his teeth and he's going to take you out. Now, in the Klitschko fight, he was getting along pretty well and he got hit and he went down.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was kind of outside of his norm. However, whenever you're attacking, you leave yourself open. Klitschko started to attack him because he had knocked him down, thereby leaving himself open. And when he did that, he got clipped. And, of course, our guy went ahead and finished him.
Right.
So I don't see heavy dog in him. I don't see it. So when you say, will he regain it? Is that what your question was? Will he be good to go in the future?
No, so that wasn't really my question. I'm sure he's going to fight again. He's a blue chip.
Yes, yes.
And what I was asking, and I'm sure the listeners probably already keyed in on this, which is that, you know, did we just open the floodgates to a new era of boxing?
Oh, yes.
New heavyweight era of boxing. So that means, like, okay, so who is in this weight class, in the weight division, that we need to be talking about that is sliding up into the conversation? And, you know, obviously there's Tyson Fury, there's Dillian White, Dillian White's still there. You know, you've got Trevor Bryan, you've got Manuel Carr, and you got Anthony Joshua there, right? And you've also got, you know, the likes of Usyk, which, by the way, prior to this fight, Usyk was ranked, I think, number 4 by the WBA, and he was ranked number 3 by the IBF, and he was ranked number 1 by the WBO. But I believe that in all three of those, you know, all these sanctioning bodies, he was kind of not even up at the top. You've got Daniel Dubois, Michael Hunter, Anthony Ruiz, of course, he's still there. Luis Ortiz King Kong is still in the division at number 4, ranked by the WBC at number 4. You've got Joe Joyce at number 3. Gosh, Charles Martin is ranked by the IBF as number 2. He might have moved up, actually, but he was ranked recently at there. And, I mean, there's guys like Otto Wallen down at number 12. And, you know, there's some guys there that I've been watching for quite a while that I think it's just really like an interesting, we're coming into an interesting time. We know what's happening in a couple of weeks. Let's talk about that briefly. We've got go ahead. Why don't you just tell us what's happening in a couple of weeks, the big fight, heavyweight.
Well, before I go there, you spoke of all those fighters. Now, they are going to be methodical and somewhat slow as Joshua was. So they're going to have issues with Usyk. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
All those fighters that you named, they're not quick of hand. They're not. They're big and they're going to move well and all that, but they're going to be in the same boat as Joshua is. The only thing that could be different is if they try to impose their will, physical will, on him by, you know, grabbing him and pushing him,
right,
and calling him that kind of situation. But
making
the problem
a
with
tough
that
fight
is he could easily win on points, because if you look at this fight here, he went to knock AJ out in
right
the last two rounds.
Right.
He was
said, going for it.
And take him out because I've got him in pocket. Whereas the other gentleman, he may not be able to knock them out, but he's gonna be able to outquick them. Now, the only one who I know, not the only one, but I watched some other ones to a point, but the one that I know, he has to be faster than the other person. Deontay Wilder has a fast left, has a fast right hand.
Right.
It's fast.
Oh, uh-huh.
There's no doubt about it. So being fast like that's something he usually has to deal with. Everyone else, he's gonna see all that stuff coming.
Yeah.
I think Tyson Fury would give him a problem too, because Tyson Fury is quick. and he's big, and he's going to lean on you, and he can box too.
But he can. So, well, that's what I was going to say. He that style mix. Those styles are very similar in that he's totally capable. Meaning Fury is totally capable of boxing,
of dealing with that kind
and,
of style.
Yeah, and get he can bounce on his feet. He can yo-yo in and out. He can mix it up, and he can bang when he has to bang. So I think that, you know, another guy I think that might give him a little bit of a problem is Andy Ruiz. I think Andy Ruiz would give Usyk a little bit of a problem because of his style, the style of fighting.
And he's very quick. He's quick. He's very quick. He doesn't telegraph anything, and it's totally off the cuff. Yes, you're absolutely. He's quick. But the other ones, Joe Joyce and King Kong and all those guys, they're methodical. He's going to see everything coming. So yeah. I don't see him having any problem with those guys. They're just going to go the distance. They may be even snoozers, but he's going to win those fights. It's the ones with guys who have hand speed that are going to rival him so he has to pay attention to what's coming back at him. He wasn't worried about what came back at him in this fight.
Right.
Even when he fought Chisora, he wasn't worried about what was coming back to him.
Right.
He has to be worried about what's coming back to him. And I don't see any of those fighters that you've made a name on the peripheral, I mean, on the outside, that really could do anything.
Right.
Wow. Now, you said you want to go into the Wilder fight?
Well, yeah.
We've spoken on this, and I don't want to go back over that too many times. we just have to see if he can incorporate what he's learned. That's
right.
All I can really say about that.
Right. I mean, he's throwing out. I mean, I know he just shot a message out to Tyson Fury, that he was basically, you know, coming for him and, you know, just like it's a matter of life or death. He's got no other choice. He's coming for him, all this business. So, I mean, I'm really excited. I think they're building the fight nicely. I know that the fight is selling very well. The Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fight is definitely selling well. So it'll be an interesting thing to see who wins that fight, Harold, because whoever wins that fight, right? I guess Usyk gets a shot. Usyk should probably get a shot. How do you think it's going to line up?
I would think Usyk's going to make a little money first. He's going to fight maybe two or three of these guys because he's got all those belts. The sanctioned bodies, they want to get some of that money from him defending those bills, those sanctioned fees, before he has an opportunity to lose them all to somebody else.
Right.
So I think he's going to come right back and fight them other guys. I think all the other belts are going to say, okay, well, you got to defend your title with us. So, you know, the WBO, I want mine, and IBF, I want mine, and what's going to want theirs. So they can, you know, reap the benefits of him, you know, a new face out there, this, that, and the other, before he takes the opportunity to lose them all.
Right.
Or win the WBC. So I don't see him coming right back and fighting any of those guys. I mean, those between the two. I don't see that. I just don't see that.
Right.
There's just too much money to be made. You just can't just give those belts away when, you know, they need to get those defenses out.
Right. Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I was just looking, you know, I think some people are saying that Usyk is now pound for pound. Are they putting him in the class for pound for pound?
I think it's a Lomachenko effect, just because he moved so well and he was so astute with his application of the southpaw versus right hand type of thing. And he was beaten up our boy in the last two rounds.
Right.
I wouldn't say he's pound for pound because he hasn't proven it. That's just one gentleman whose style just didn't do anything to really show him. Now, if he could do this on a regular basis consistently, then I would put him pound for pound. But right now, I think the heavyweight division is so sensationalized and the world,
you
know, love the heavyweight champion and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
They're rushing to put him there.
Right. I agree with you there. You know, if you look at his ascension, into the heavyweight division, well, at least in the last four or five, six fights, you know, the order goes from the fight, that happened the furthest away to the most recent, and I'll just call them out. He faced back in 2017, he faced Michael Hunter. And then in September of 2017, he faced Marco Huck. Then in 2018, in January of 2018, he fought Maurice Brides. And then in July of 2018, he fought Murat Gassiev. And then in November of 2018, he fought Tony Bellew. And then in October of 2019, he fought Chaz Witherspoon. And then in October of 2020, he fought Derek Chisora. And then he makes his way to Anthony Joshua. So it is a pretty impressive streak of wins to be. I mean, he's actually never lost, so I shouldn't have said it like that, because he's never lost. He's undefeated, 19 wins, 13 KOs, right? And no losses, no draws. You know, southpaw, 6'3", 78-inch reach. Fighting out of Oxnard, California, and is from the Ukraine. So, you know, this guy's the real deal. He's there, Harold. He's there. He's right there. He's holding three belts, right? He's got three belts, yes. Right? He's got the IBF, WBO, and WBC, right?
No, not the WBC.
Oh, WBA. Excuse me. Pardon me. The WBA. Apologies. Apologies, Tyson Fury. Oh boy. Okay. Well, so yeah, I mean, that's legit. So anyway, we won't beat this dead horse any further. I know that you wanted to talk a little bit, and I'm really excited to talk about this. I was actually gonna see if I could get Senior on the horn, because we always love. He's one of my favorite guys to have on the program. But we were talking about Teofimo Lopez and the George Gamboza fight, which is, it's on the launch pad, man. It's ready to go. It's on Fight TV, October 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going down. Teofimo Lopez against George Gamboza Jr. Let's go.
It's so close. I wonder what their training camps are like right now, because it's off and on, off and on. Mark, you know training camps. You know how they can get broken up and they don't get back on track again, and they get broken up again, they back on track. This, to me, feels crazy. There's no consistency in these training camps. There's no consistency in the event, where the event's going to be. I just see so many problems.
Yeah.
With the training camps being smooth and everything going as it should. And I think it's going to affect one or both fighters to a point where you may see a flat performance from someone. Gamboza is just hanging on. He wants to get that payday so he can change his life.
Right.
So he's going to do whatever he has to do. Lopez, he's got a baby coming on the way. His family just recently reconciled with his wife because they didn't like her. They thought she was a gold digger type of thing. So now she's dropping the baby. So they're kind of forced to get it.
She's dropping. She better not be dropping the baby. What do you mean she's dropping the baby? She's going to literally drop the baby on the floor?
Excuse my street vernacular. She's having a child. Having his child. And usually that can, you know, galvanize a family, and, you know, all things are put aside, you know, when a new life is coming into the family to further, you know, the legacy. So, you know, a lot of those kind of things are kind of put aside. But he's dealing with that. He's dealing with the change of the venues. He had the COVID. I just don't see his training being smooth at all. You know, when do I go in? Can I not go in? You know, do I want to sit with my wife? This, that, and the other. And Gamboza he hasn't seen his kids. He's been away from his family. I mean, there's so many things going on. I think one of them is going to have a flat performance. I really do. And I don't know which one.
Wow.
So it's just how I see it. Of course, you being a trainer, you may be able to shed some light on what I'm thinking. I'm just on the outside of that. But I believe you need to have a smooth training camp so you can perform. And if it keeps being broken up and broken up, not only physically as in your workout, but mentally, are we going to be in Australia? No, we're going to be in here. We're going to be there. It's so all over.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you raised some really, really powerful and alarming concerns about the fight. And I definitely can see how you would come to the conclusion that one or both of them may miss the mark on the performance. I definitely agree with you. It's all hypothetical, right? We're sitting here and we're chopping up what we think based on what we know, right? So what I would say is that I've never seen the Lopez camp ever, you know, half step it. So they're usually all in. So, but you know, again, a fighter who's 16-0 with 12 KOs, you know, if you're gonna run into some training issues and some discipline issues, it's gonna be right in there because, you know, you're knocking people out. You're kind of running the roost, and that's very, very easy to get sidetracked there. If for any reason Mr. Lopez would get sidetracked, that would be very unfortunate. But it wouldn't be a surprise because we know that in boxing road is littered with guys that have, you know, climbed the ladders, gotten into pole position, gotten into big money fights, and then just kind of threw it all away. So, you know, that is a cautionary thing. I just don't, you know, we know, you know, and I know very well the Lopez camp. And, you know, I've, you know, been involved with them a little intimately in years past. And so I just don't see that being something that would be expected. But, you know, it's boxing, man. Anything can happen. And you're fighting a fighter who is fighting for his life and is destined, you know, to produce a great performance. He's just coming out to put on a good performance in George Kambosos Jr. Now, we know that, you know, there can be, you know, there's great and then there's good, right? There's good fighters and there's great fighters. And sometimes good fighters get paired with great fighters. So the question becomes, is George Kambosos a good fighter or is he a great fighter? And on October 4th, I think we're going to see that, Harold. We're going to see if he's a good fighter or a great fighter. Because Teofimo Lopez, you know, to his credit, has proven that time and time again, he can step up and fight real fighters and get the job done. So can he do that with all the distractions of family and children and, you know, his very, very comfortable life at this point? I don't know. I'm getting Louis Tovar is saying the takeover on, you know, thanks for joining the podcast, Louis. Thanks for being on YouTube. But, you know, you got Louis Tovar saying undisputed, the takeover. So they know, I mean, these guys, you know, the fans and the guys out there, they know that, you know, Teofimo is for real. He's the real deal. He's out of Brooklyn, New York. He's 16-0, 12 KOs, as I said before. And, you know, his alias is the takeover, right? The dude is a banger. He can fight. And, you know, for all intent and purposes, George Kambosos looks pretty good too. You know, he looks good in training camp. But, you know, there's levels to this, right? There's levels to this. So tell me what you think, Harold. I've been shooting my mouth off long enough.
Well, George is a mandatory. So this is good for Mr. Lopez. He's going to get paid well. He gets to defend his title. He gets to get himself in the public eye. George is not really a threat to him to win.
Right.
On paper or that kind of thing. So I can do nothing but appreciate, you know, the opportunity to see him and just add more, you know, to the fire of, you know, all these other guys who are in his weight class who are trying to get an opportunity to fight him, meaning Lopez and Haney and all these other people. So I look forward to it. And he's very theatrical. His father's theatrical. He is really entertaining in every sense of the situation. So I'm just glad to see him out there working, and I'm glad we're going to see the fight. But I don't see him being really threatened or anything like that. You know, if he's on point and if Kambosos is on point, we should see a good fight. Now, the undercard, I don't know anything about, but it's changed so many times, I don't have a clue who could be on there. But yes, Lopez should have a great, he should have a good performance, providing those elements we spoke of do not affect him. You know, I don't want to see Kambosos get blown out in the first round either, because, you know, he is out of his native country, away from his kids, all that. I don't want to see that either. So hopefully to work out where we can have a good fight and we can speak positive of George, whether he wins or loses.
Right. Well, listen, if you're listening out there on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts, Alexa Podcast, whatever, you know, make sure that you share the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast, right? If you're on YouTube, make sure you hit the like, subscribe, just bang it real hard. Hit that thing real hard and subscribe, like it, and share it, man. Share it with other people that are wanting to get into the conversation about boxing. We love to chop up boxing. And yeah, that's what's up, man. And leave your comments, because your comments really, we'll make sure we put them up on the screen, and we want to include you as much as possible in the conversation for sure. Right, Harold?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, thank man.
Luis.
Exactly. So, you know, just to switch gears a little bit real quick, Harold, I just wanted to say that for the listeners out there, I'll list a couple of the upcoming boxing bouts that are coming up on the schedule. Just so you have an idea of what's coming up, so you know where to tune in and where to check out the upcoming boxing events. We have Eubank against Muratov on Sky Sports October 2nd at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then we have Lopez versus Kambosos on Fight TV October 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Fowler versus Smith on DAZN October 9th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Foster versus Cunningham on BT Sports October 9th at 2 p.m. Fury versus Wilder 3, the big kahunas, on BT Sports, ESPN Plus, Fox Pay-Per-View October 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Navarrete versus Gonzalez, ESPN Plus October 15th. At 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And guess what? Fury versus Hammer, Sky Sports, October 16th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, Garcia versus Martin on DAZN, October 16th at 9 p.m. And I'm going to leave it. Actually, I'm not going to leave it, because I wanted to get to this last one here. We've got Rivas versus Jennings, October 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm not sure if that's televised, actually. And then Stevenson versus Herring on ESPN. That's a must-see TV on ESPN. Good job, Top Rank. October 23rd at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the last two would be White versus Wallen on DAZN, October 30th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And here, this is the one that I cannot wait for. Canelo Alvarez versus Caleb Plant, Showtime pay-per-view, November 6th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Man, there's so much stuff floating around about that.
Yeah, man.
Caleb Plant is going all in with the mental games. He got T-shirts out there with syringes on them saying that our boy is a drug cheat.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't understand English, so he use the word MF in a way that he didn't need to.
Right.
He's just really going all in.
He sure is.
Like we spoke earlier, if in fact you go in there angry, you can make mistakes. And he is really trying to get Canelo angry so Canelo makes mistakes. However, when Canelo gets mad at someone, he really beats him up, though. He doesn't lose his movement. Oh, look at that. The undisputed champion of the world. That's a beautiful. Where did you get that, sir?
Y'all know where I got that. That's a Teofimo Lopez special, man. And look, all I'm saying is I was very neutral just now about, you know, expressing the Camposos fight. I'm a very neutral. You guys know that. Everybody who knows me knows that I'm like Switzerland. I keep things neutral. But, you know, I will tell you, you know, I'm wearing my shirt. I got Luis Tovar here on YouTube who's making comments here, and I just wanted to sport my takeover jersey here so you could see I got the takeover jersey on as well. So yep, I get it. And
talking about Plant and Canelo.
I'm not talking about Plant and Canelo, because you know what, if that's like, you know, when you're waiting for like Christmas, if you don't, I don't know if you celebrate Christmas, but if you're waiting for Christmas and it's like, you can't sleep, and you're up, and you're tossing and turning. I don't want to do that. I'm waiting for this fight so much, so I try not to think about it too much, because if I do, I won't be able to sleep. This is going to be Caleb Plant and Canelo Alvarez. That is going to be an explosive fight. These guys have a lot of bad blood for one another, Harold. They do not like each other. They don't, and, you know, one of them scratched the other with his nail. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't his nail. It was the glasses. I know. But, you know, he's got a cut over his eye. This is happening there. You know, there's all kinds of memes on Facebook and YouTube and all Snapchat everywhere. TikTok is like, you know, when Canelo uses the word, the mother word, you know, and what that means, like he's used it 1,000 times, right? And, but when Caleb Plant uses it and it didn't actually mean anything about the guys, about Canelo's mother, it's just, I don't know.
He used it in the connotation that he desired at the present time.
Yo, right? Yo.
I'm going to use this way because I want some issue.
Yo.
So he did, though. He did that. But it's all beautiful stuff. I mean, think about it. We're talking about it. It's floating around. All it's doing is bring interest to the fight.
Yeah, but Harold, listen, Harold, Canelo, this is for you. Canelo, listen to me. You must listen to me right now. No te tiren la golpe en la cabeza hasta la pelea, which means don't throw your punches now before you get to the fight. That Spanish was probably a little broken, but don't hurt him now. Don't beat each other up now, all right? Don't do anything where you're going to get suspended or anything like that's going to happen, or he gets a cut and now he can't fight because he's cut, and oh, we got to postpone the fight, and oh, you know, there's this and there's that. Don't be, you know, letting anybody slip any kind of hamburger juice into your drinks, or, you know, don't I'm saying do not let anybody slip any hamburger juice into your drink where now you don't pass the drug test, or, you know, you got a cut on your eye. You guys gotta, like, listen, you gotta man up, get with it. Don't do anything to mess up this fight, because it's going down and we're gonna see who's real in this fight. Well,
there'll be no more press conferences with them on the same stage. That's done. Because the promoters and everyone cannot take that chance of them pushing each other and someone being hurt. They dodged a bullet then, because he really pushed them hard. Either one of them could have fell off the stage and hurt an ankle or any kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a push. You could have broke a rib on that push.
Anything could have happened. So right now, they'll be, if there are any further press conferences or anything like that, they will not be in the same room. Period. That will not happen. That's done. They cannot let that money get away, because these guys have, you know, bravado.
But I wonder, you think there's any kind of fear associated with that push like that? Because that was a push, man. That was like, get out.
There's so many people who are analyzing the whole situation.
Yeah.
the looking and the staring and the movement and the arm movement and the body posture. And I know you know all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some people who are really looking into it and speculate how the fight's going to go strictly by, you know, the way they posture themselves, the push itself, the body language that was exhibited before the push, you know, the face, all it's being analyzed like NASA. They're going in on it.
Yeah. No, and not only are they going, go ahead, Harold. Go ahead. Sorry about
that. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, not only are they going in on it, but, you know, like they're making a lot about the gash over or underneath Plant's eye, you know, and Plant characterized the gash underneath his, I think it was his right eye, as a small little, just a small little scrape. It's no big deal. But they're, you know, the media is coming out. They're like, yo, this is a big gash underneath his eye, right? So they're going back and forth with that. Were they trying to set something up to stop, to make the fight not go off, or what are they doing?
Sensationalize it, please. Just the bigger they can get, the better it is.
Harold.
So journalists can say and type and say whatever they want, as long as the commission upon the physical thinks he can fight, he's going to fight. They can say his eyes hanging out. They can print his eyes hanging out. But right. If the commission says it's good, there's going to be a fight, let them sell newspapers. Let them sell their publications. Let them, you know, have their market share. Let them say whatever they want to say.
Right.
You know, but the commission has the final word, and the commission says already there's going to be a fight. So
right.
They can say or do whatever they want to do. Now, as far as the posture is concerned, pushing all that kind of stuff, I looked at it, and I don't know body language, all that kind of stuff, as you would, Mark. But to me, a Plant wasn't necessarily exhibiting any ring type of situation. He was in a street mode where you get in the pocket with somebody, you have no intention of hitting them or fighting them, but it's a verbal thing mostly. Now, Canelo was completely different. His body language, to me, exhibited he was ready to throw his hands. And when that happened, he automatically went to a natural a chin tuck, left-right combination.
He did a pullback. No, he pulled back, right-hand, left hook. He actually pulled back off the shot. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Right, and that's my point. Plant had no inclination in that.
Yeah,
Plant
I agree.
Was simply posturing as you do in the street. You know,
yeah,
and that's what happened. So if you try to say Plant's going to be this and he's going to be that in the ring, there's no basis for that in my humble, uneducated body language opinion.
Right.
He just showed me the street posture, but Canelo was always in the actual fight posture in that instance.
Right. Well, you know, I agree. And I think that, you know, if there's no sacred place, it's at the face-off. If you can't face off with another man and stare into his soul and crack that soul and crack that will on the line, toeing the line, without punching him, then, you know, I'm a little concerned about that because there's some self-control issue there. You know, that you gotta, you know, first of all, that's a sacred spot to be in. And you can shoot your mouth off. You can say all you want. But when you start hitting and put, you know, and you start, you know, knocking people out there at the line, you know, there's no sacred place, man. You can't even toe the line. You have to like be 6 feet apart because, you know, the next time they get close to one another, you know, who can't control themselves? That's not a good, it's not a good look. It's not a good look for the sport. I don't know. I think there's a lot more to that body language, as you said earlier, that the viewers and the listeners are going to definitely want to pay attention to, because it just kind of gave me a different perspective that I hadn't had on who I believe would win the fight. So, you know, I'm not going to share with, you know, specifically who I believe will win the fight, but
Don't ask me, because I got mine already.
Okay. I believe that. I already know what you think, so I'm pretty sure I got your picks pegged. But you know, as we get closer to that fight, we will break that fight down. I cannot wait to do a breakdown. I'm gonna go all in for that breakdown, you guys. That one's gonna be a very, very good breakdown. It's gonna be scientific. I'm gonna really share some things with you that I normally don't share on the podcast, because you know, right? I got my tricks. Got my tricks on this side. I got my tricks on this side, right? So I make sure that I try not to divulge too many tricks on the air. But
yeah, I want to teach me, man. From your standpoint as a trainer, I got
to be fair to the fighters I work with too, because you know, if I share too many of the technical stuff on the air of the way that I would approach a particular fight or something, that, you know, I mean, that's not fair to my fighters, right? Because then the opponent's going to be listening in. They're going to be like, oh, I know what he's going to do. No, not a chance.
You have to be measured with your explanation, correct?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys probably don't think I'm measured. If you do, put it in the comments. If you think I'm measuring, I'll make sure I pour some extra sugar on that. I'm not going to measure, man. I'm just trying to really be in my authentic self and really just share with you, you know, boxing, just what I believe about boxing. You know, I'm also, you know, speaking of that, another fight that I'm really, really looking forward to is to see Fulton back in. I want to see Fulton against Figueroa. Yeah, that's right. Fulton's going to be in versus Figueroa Jr. On Showtime in November. That's like Thanksgiving week, like
that
November.
Great fight.
Oh, yeah. Figueroa
does not take a backward step. He can take a punch. He's vicious.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's going to be. And Tim Zhu's back in the ring against Takashi Inoue, right? That guy who's actually on the pound for pound list. So Tim Zhu stepping up big time, man. That's a big step up for him. And that's on November.
In a way, on that list, there's you know, the monster.
Yeah.
And then this guy.
Right.
Actually on that top 10 pound for pound list.
Yeah, that's November 17th.
I don't know if they're relatives or they may share the same surname.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, that's good to know. That's good for me to know, and it's good for the fans to know, because I didn't know that.
So that's going to be a good fight. Yeah, he's really stepping up. He's really stepping up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, rarely you see someone's namesake actually do well. You know, we had Marvis Frazier. We had some of them who got so far on the name of their father, and they really got in the fire. They were turned off pretty quickly there.
Didn't Ricky Hatton's son just fight recently?
Yeah, he's fighting. He's fighting, but... I'm not saying his diet will be, you know, easily digested.
Yeah.
Because his father's background. So
Well, maybe we can have Ricky Hatton on the air at some point in the near future. That would be great to have him on, right?
Yes. Hearns had a son, and when they put some food in front of him, he became food himself, so he stopped fighting. So you have so many sons who've gone forward. So thus far, Zoo seems to be the one now. And if he can actually get by this gentleman here, he's legitimate.
Right. Right. No, absolutely legit. Legit, legit, legit. And are they going to mandate that Joshua fight to happen again? Is Joshua going to be back? Again with Usyk before anything else?
Well, it's an immediate rematch, but the rule of thought is he doesn't need to take that fight right now, because he could lose the fight again, and then, you know, it diminishes his earning power or his opportunities. Ooh. Because if he goes back to that guy again, the problem is those belts are going to get fragmented. They're going to get fragmented. You know how belts go. If you don't defend mine, we're going to strip you and this and that and the other. So the best thing to do is try to keep them all together.
Right.
So I don't know. I can't say The boxing purists say he shouldn't fight him again. The contract says he has to fight him again. And we just don't know. Now, on another tip, on a physical type of situation concerning belts, physical, not the political and the winning of the belts, but after the fight was over, Usyk brought the physical belts and gave them back to Joshua in the locker room.
Right.
He gave him back his physical belts. When you lose a fight like that
right.
in the ring, the person who has came in with all the belts, those are his belts. He owns those belts. But you get to take those belts as a winner and take all your pictures and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Practices. And then you have to give them back.
When that's all over, you take the belts and give them back to the owner, and then the sanctioned buyers will mail you your belts with your name and this and that on it. So a lot of times, fighters will keep the belts of the other gentleman that they won, and they'll keep them until they get their belts in the mail, and then they'll return them back.
Right.
Because they want to run around their city with the belts all, you know, they want to have all the belts with them, even though it's the former champion's belt's name, they right. still want to have it because they got TV and this and that, and that. And they will hold on to those until they get their regular belts, and then they'll ship them back.
But
the classic thing to do is the day of, you know, your victory, for you to give those belts back, you know.
Well,
at that point, they're souvenirs for Joshua.
Yeah, the one thing you will attest to, and I will attest to, is that Joshua, Anthony Joshua, and Alexander Usyk are both consummate gentlemen, professionals, great human beings. And their level of sportsmanship in the midst of it all was just outstanding. I mean, some of the stuff that came across the wire that they were, you know, some of the conversations that they were having and the way that they treated one another was really, really just special. You know, just really class act, classy kind of behavior from the world champions, you know, both of them.
That's true. But it almost bled over into the fight, and I didn't like that. The referee had to stop them from kissing in the third round because they kept bumping gloves, and that takes intensity out the fight.
Right.
So the third round, they went to kind of bump gloves again, and the referee like, I'm not having this. And he got in between that and broke that little love fest up.
Yeah.
And they didn't touch gloves anymore.
Right.
They were going to touch gloves after every round if the referee hadn't forced them to be more combative.
Right, right.
And I'm glad that the referee foresaw that and he broke that up.
Right.
Because it would have been more, it was a good fight, but it would have been more a foregone conclusion if they kept giving each other respect after each round. Because obviously, Joshua, you know, started to lose his situation, and you know he was getting more and more passive, and the touching gloves after every round would just sped that process up. So I was glad to see you do it. But as you said, they were gentlemen and they were nice to each other, and it even spilled over into the ring. And I'm glad that the referee saw that and stopped it.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was you know, it's always good to see that kind of level of sportsmanship in the midst of it all. You know, Harold.
So, I want to see a fight, Mark.
Which one? Yeah, I know you want to see a fight. I get it.
And that's a way to give up early.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's that. There is that. So, I get your point. I get it. And I think a lot of the listeners agree with you, too. Like, I don't care that nice stuff. Hey, I want to see these guys knock their blocks off.
Check the third round, the end of the third round. listeners, and you will see exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The referee said, no.
All right. Right. What are you doing?
This is a fight.
Right. Yeah, no, I get
so
that.
So I digress.
No, man, you digress. you're awesome, Harold, bro. You're awesome. And you know what? Your listeners out there, you're awesome. Everybody's awesome. Thank you all for being with us tonight on the Boxing Breakdown. Yeah. It's a pleasure as always. Harold, what can I say, man? It's a pleasure to be with you. This is like my favorite time of the week when I get together with you to break down boxing, and it's a delight to be with you and the fans and the listeners out there So with that,
same here.
I just want to wish you all peace and love and good health. And until next time, we'll see you on the next edition of the Boxing Breakdown. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast and to us on YouTube. Share it with your friends and get involved in the conversation. And thank you so much for being with us week after week on the Boxing Breakdown. Until next time, we're out.
See ya.
Yeah, see ya.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxie and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxie.